Good morning. We're hearing the matter S1SC40636. It's the loudest I've ever been. All right. City of Las Cruces versus New Mexico Public Regulation Commissioner. We'll commission, strike that commission. We'll start with the petitioner. Stephen, do you have 20 minutes?
Good morning.
Good morning.
At least half a dozen previous decisions concerning El Paso Electric Company's use of the Palo Verde nuclear generating station. We agreed to provide electricity to New Mexico customers after that unit was deemed excess capacity in 1986, even before it ever entered service. But at a higher level, this appeal raises the question of whether the commission has violated the principles of the rule of law, which espouses predictability of the law and coherence of the legal system as a whole. This is often described as having a government of laws and not of men, or that no one is above the law. Procedural and substantive fairness and consistency in administrative decisions are part of the rule of law. Under the standard of administrative orders, a standard of review of administrative orders, the agency's decision is arbitrary and capricious if it provides no rational connection between the facts found and the choices made, or if it omits consideration of relevant factors or important aspects of the problem at hand.
What deference do we give to the PRC's interpretation of its own orders?
Not that much. No, honestly, it's...
I'm not sure I agree with you on our jurisprudence.
I'll put it differently. Whether, it depends on how the commission, it depends on the rationality of the commission's decision as well. So both the commission and the court are always bound by the notion that you start with the language of whether it's an order, a stipulation, an agreement,
mm-hmm.
a statute.
But here it's really an order that we're focused on.
Well, here it's an order, yes.
Okay. Still not sure I understand what you think.
I think the deference due to the order is. Sorry? The deference due to the order?
Yeah, what is that?
It's certainly not as high as Appellees claim they come up with standards about that essentially are clearly erroneous or things like that. Mm-hmm. Not anywhere in New Mexico's case law, and they just don't make sense. The cases that they've cited involve, in one case, a judge correcting her own decision, clarifying her own ambiguous decision. And that's the key aspect.
So if we're writing an opinion, what standard would you ask us to adopt in writing that opinion?
Well,
just lay it out there.
Okay, I would go back to Rio Grande chapters of the Sierra Club versus New Mexico Mining Commission, as I was starting to say, that the court may not supply a reasoned basis to support the commission's decision, which the commission itself hasn't given. The court may uphold a decision of less than ideal clarity if the agency's path may reasonably be discerned, but in doing so, the court is, and I quote, in no way bound by the agency's legal interpretation.
How do you balance that with, and this is related language to my mind, that we have used, in particular New Mexico Industry Energy Consumers, that the commission is statutorily and constitutionally free to use any rate-making formula it chooses. And so how do I use that language coupled with reasoned basis that you are proposing for us to adopt in an opinion?
Your Honor, this is going to sound a little weird, but there's a question here about whether there's rate-making involved or what kind of rate-making is involved. Because this was, until the company started using the term proxy price rate, in all those previous cases, the commission never used that phrase. And very carefully, the most recent decision, the rate case 20-00104, mm-hmm. which is, I think, the best analysis, although when we challenged that, the parties all agreed it was dicta and the court dismissed the appeal. But under that standard, she used the word, the hearing examiner in that case repeatedly used the term compensation for use of Palo Verde Unit 3. And one has to remember that, first of all, Palo Verde Unit 3 is deregulated. It's essentially an affiliate transaction. It's not maybe technically one because El Paso hasn't divided itself into an unregulated and unregulated entity, but when they're dealing with Unit 3, they're dealing on their own behalf, not on behalf of ratepayers.
So is that your reasoning for why this isn't rate-making, that they're dealing on their own behalf and not on, or is there another reason?
Well, and then the second crucial aspect of this is that under 6287E, the statute on the appeal clause, the commission was directed, explicitly directed, to set up procedures in which it can review rates after the fact. This goes back to New Mexico Energy, Industrial Energy Consumers case, after the fact, because under the appeal clause, there's no prior approval of the costs. And it would take a great deal of imagination to assume that the commission ever would have given prior approval to a rate of $235.95 per megawatt hour for every hour of the day of February or every hour of the day of any month ever. And staff's position was this. Right. It was on a scale. You know, the scale was just out of anybody's expectations. The commission the commission repeatedly rejected staff out of hand.
What would you have the PRC and utility company do when an emergency arises?
Well, when an emergency
This was. I mean, I don't think that there's any fair dispute that the decline in temperature and the inability to provide effective energy wasn't in peril at that time. So okay. What are they to do?
Well, they are to do the best that they can to anticipate and plan for it. And as the cases that I believe it's El Paso cites at the end of their brief, from cases from other jurisdictions, when they go out and have to spend money to repair broken equipment or things like that, they should be, even though that's out of a general rate case regime and would not be in a test period, they often allow a regulatory asset so that they can come back and collect that and be made whole. Again, the fuel clause is an entirely different mechanism because it's supposed to be an ongoing made whole mechanism. And what we have here is this artificial construct of the proxy price, which again we believe was, you know, under the decisions which the commission and EPE, if you read the record, the entire record, the only time the phrase "for this stipulation" only appears is in the city's pleadings. Not once. In the final order on rehearing, the commission briefly sort of alludes to a durational concern, and they say, well, that doesn't matter because the operative case here was 18000006 UT. So after saying in the first order, order for further proceedings, that the 09171 stipulation was the operative stipulation. At the very end, they jumped to another case, which, of course, I hope that you have recognized that since the commission refused to hear the city's arguments, city's and other interveners' arguments in that case, challenging the the proxy price, that cannot possibly be authority. You know, the commission just cannot listen to one side, say something's outside of the scope repeatedly, strike our testimony, refuse to hear our arguments, and then say, oh, we decided that.
Counsel, I got a question. What's involved in this case, tell me if I'm right or wrong, is the PRC's interpretation of its own previous orders.
Correct.
So getting back to the very first question you were asked, when the PRC is interpreting its own previous orders, what standard of review does this court give that interpretation? Excuse my throat, it's got a bunch of junk in there.
Well, over the years,
what is the standard of review?
There's some level of deference, but always the court is the final decider of questions of law. And here, I mean, again, the question is if the commission refuses to consider, and the standards that the court uses are, you know, you look to the language. If the language is ambiguous, then you look to.
But you're not, whatever that standard is, you're not arguing for a change.
I'm not arguing for a change in the
standard. Because where I'm getting at is Chevron has been abandoned in the federal system. If our case law says we still give considerable deference to the agency interpretation of its own rules, particularly where its own agency expertise is involved, you're not arguing for a change to that standard of review.
Justice Vigil, I don't believe, personally, I don't believe that this court, that New Mexico law ever followed Chevron deference. I really don't. And
analogy, assuming that's our rule.
Even if so I don't believe that was our standard, but if it were, you still have the same kind of fundamental starting point, is that that the language comes first, and if the commission will not address that language and just jumps to subsequently imagining that things were approved in cases, and we can go through each of the, obviously we have gone through each of the cases, we can go through each of those cases and see why the commission did not do that. And in fact, in the recommended decision in the previous rate case, the 2011-104 case, the hearing examiner did that. She just got to the point where she was sort of stymied, because in her language, there had been a series of short-term stipulations for the use of Palo Verde 3. She never used the "for the stipulation only" language either, but she didn't see that there had been anything done subsequently, felt that she was stuck with this thing because she didn't just...
Counsel, I'm trying to put this in terms that we can understand.
Okay, yeah.
English. Okay. It seems to me that your fundamental disagreement is there was an order that contained a stipulation addressing case one, issue one.
Right.
And you disagree with the PRC using that stipulation in cases two and cases three and coming forward without a reasoned process for adopting that agreement with Palo Verde to come forward in time and apply to other issues. Is that a fair layperson's description of what your disagreement is?
Yes, and the reason for that disagreement, or the compelling reason for that disagreement, is because both the stipulation in the 09 case and the commission's order in the 09 case said this is only until the next rate case. And so, I mean, it was plain as day, and the city was one of the parties to that stipulation. How can we, if the commission won't enforce all of the terms, if the commission selectively enforces the terms of its stipulations, why should we ever join
a
stipulation?
What is the problem with the commission saying, we liked the way we handled it in case one, and so we're going to adopt it in case two and three and four? What is wrong with that, irregardless or disregarding the language about for the stipulation only? What is wrong with them carrying it into later
Because they didn't
cases?
Allow it to be, excuse me, Sure. Justice Vargas, because they didn't allow the parties to address the issue in the first case, the 13380, they just ruled on that. And again, I agree with the recommended decision in the last rate case rather than the commission's interpretations in this case, that it was not ruled upon. It was asked for but not ruled upon, and there was no need for them to rule upon it at that time because that original stipulation was still the existing framework, right? It was still in place. When they got to the second case, the 2015 rate case, the commission, on the first page of the recommended decision, it says that the fuel clause was continued in the previous, the 13-003-80 case. So, and it's a long recommended decision. It's a long final order. There's not a word about the fuel clause
so
being
it's not
approved,
that
except
you...
she adjusted the base cost, but there was nothing about the fuel clause, nothing even less about the proxy price.
So your primary dispute is not necessarily about the methodology used, but about the process employed?
I guess the concern is that the process never, and then we get to the third case, right? This is the important one. In 18006, the city and even the staff asked for the case to be docketed, unlike a quickie that they had done the 4 years earlier. And I apologize, there's a typo in my brief that says three instead of four. But instead of we asked that a case be docketed, a whole case be docketed on that fuel clause continuation in order. One of the reasons was because we had concerns about the proxy price methodology, and the hearing examiner ruled that as outside of the scope. So how can the commission, again, have approved it or endorsed it if they only want to listen to one side of the evidence?
So, piggybacking on Justice Vargas, it seems to me that you are concerned about process. But in framing, I'm still trying to understand what our standard of review is here. So are your concerns legal concerns, or are they factual concerns?
They are, Justice Bacon.
And then if you're going to say both.
Legal. They are mostly legal. Once we get past the legal, then we can get into and accept the framework that the commission used in this case, because, I mean, we kind of acceded to it, right? Then we have factual concerns.
And so what's the factual concern?
The factual concern is if you follow the commission's reasoning such as it was, they said that it was impossible, they said in the order for further proceeding that it was contrary to their duties under the Public Utility Act to assume that the price would be reasonable in any circumstance in the future, price formula set in 2009. And then the rest of the case, they first of all narrow it down to just those 8 days, and you'll see, pretend that the cost wasn't applied to every single day, and they won't take any evidence on every, they don't even address the evidence on every single day. And then they say that instead of the price doesn't matter because reliability is everything, which is directly contrary to their holding just a few months before in the rate case, that it was okay for EPE to walk, you know, to take away Palo Verde 3 from New Mexico because purchase power is equivalent in reliability. And that's the same, we have the same two witnesses, Mr. Baratchik for the company and Mr. Reyes for the city, arguing essentially the same points in the testimony. I can't tell you guys how many times I have briefed these cases and lived these cases over the years, going back to the 18006 case and the appeal of the city's appeal of the rate case.
So is it your position that the cost effectiveness got kind of just collapsed into the concept of reliability?
Yes, that's a very good way of putting it. And it's on two levels, because you could look at the cost effectiveness in that 7-day period, the so-called cold weather event, if you wish to, and you can also, but you also have to look at it for the entire month, because the costs that got the ratepayers were made to bear were for the entire month. And so that's
And is it further your position that I think what you're saying is that, was it James Schittle? He was the one who said it was highly reliable because it was very low and stable fuel cost. Is that equating?
I think it was more Stephen Baratchik, but both of them, I believe, alluded to that. And the kind of mano a mano in both cases was Ed Reyes versus highlights on Mr. Baratchik.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right, we'll hear from the Public Regulation Commission. You've split your time, 15 minutes.
Yes, Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, good morning. Erin LeCocq on behalf of the New Mexico Public Regulation Commission.
So, good morning. Because you split your time, I'm going to try and get to the core, a core concern here, which is the standard of review.
Yes.
I'm now hearing oral argument. I am not clear, and I don't want you to advocate for them. I want you to announce what you think the standard of review is. But I am now hearing that the city's argument is you cannot follow previous precedent, your own precedent, let's describe it as that. That's the context we know, without some other process. It's actually almost a due process argument rather than if you follow your previous precedent, we have no obligation to give any deference to the agency in that. Tell me what your understanding is of the cafeteria of standards of review and how they apply to this order.
Mr. Chief Justice, I think the standard of review in this case, with respect to looking at the commission's prior orders, with respect to the commission interpreting its prior orders, I'm going to push back on Ms. Stevens' assertion that Chevron is not followed here in New Mexico. I think it is. I think it was affirmed or brought up in Morningstar. And we do mention this, that questions that that implicate special agency expertise or the determination of fundamental policies within the scope of the agency's statutory function are given deference.
Does it matter if it's a stipulation or an order, or if it's an order that accepts a stipulation?
I don't think so, because I don't think the stipulation actually is very relevant, honestly, here, because we have so many subsequent cases that not only extend the formula, the proxy price formula, but further the policy that was implicated within that stipulation.
So the stipulation's not important anymore because the PRC has taken essentially that original order that contained the stipulation and just said, now this is the way we're going to do it. So it's become something that is a creation of the PRC.
Yes, and I think that goes, so there's this kind of implicates two questions. It implicates the standard of the standard of review question when talking about the commission's prior orders, that the commission did very clearly undergo an analysis in this, the second recommended decision here, where it went through the history and it looked at each of these orders. And its interpretation of that requires commission expertise. And so I think for the court to accord some deference or a significant amount of deference to the commission's interpretation of its prior orders because of the commission's understanding of the function of the proxy price, of Palo Verde and how it works, of the methodology that went through all of these cases over 12 years, I think that's what the case in Morningstar was talking about.
So if that's true, that this the application of the order coming through time and then landing in this moment is controlling from your perspective, does it then mean that the testimony that the hearing officer heard is kind of irrelevant? Because if that's the structure, that's the structure, that's the structure. Because I am worried that in the testimony that the experts were conflating reliability with cheapness. And that's, there's statements to that effect kind of throughout the record where it was like, well, this is reliable because it's a low cost, which it kind of belies what happened in this case where the price had spiked because of the cold weather. But does that just not matter anymore because this is the structure that's been laid out, so we don't need all of this expert testimony interpreting what reliability and cost mean?
I don't think so, Justice Bacon. I think there are two questions here. The first question is whether this proxy price, it's a formula, the container, as it were, of how it is we're going to determine what the actual price is. And then the second piece is the question of whether it was appropriate for EPE to decide to use Palo Verde during this time. And that's, I think, what that question goes to, that this balance of, and I don't know that it was conflation necessarily of reliability and cost. I think it was a balancing test because that is what the commission is required to do. The commission is given in the statute the mandate to, let me find this exactly, to ensure reasonable and proper services shall be available. So that goes to the reliability piece at just and reasonable rates. And that is the...
I agree that that's what should happen. I'm not convinced that the testimony of the experts appropriately said we're going to decide A and then we're going to decide B. When you have statements such as the PVGS Unit 3 is highly reliable because it has very low and stable fuel costs. So it's blending reliability with cost, and those are meant to be two separate inquiries. And then if that's the case, we don't defer on that particular issue.
But that, and that would be the factual issue, and I would agree with that, Justice Bacon, that I, you know, on a substantial evidence question, which is what that would be, then the deference to the commission is much lower than on the legal question. But I think that this is really the function of the proxy price, right? This is the reason that we have it. That it is really, it's a formula that takes into account gas price, you know, the gas prices that EPE would have used had they chosen a different source of generation, but didn't because of the use in Palo Verde. And so I think the testimony that discusses reliability and the gas prices had surged across the country. And I think there was no question that this was going to be high. And it was going to be high whether the commission approved the use of Palo Verde through this proxy price. It was going to be high whether EPE chose to use a different source of generation and had to pay those gas prices. And so I think there is testimony also in the record that discusses the balancing, or not balancing, but the inquisition that EPE undertook quickly, because Justice Bacon, you did mention this earlier, that this was an emergency. They needed to act quickly. So there was inquiry into local sources of generation. There is EPE's witness Gonzalez and Voracek stated that there were no viable generation alternatives. And so I think looking at that reliability, that was probably first and foremost on their mind, because the prices in the remainder of, you know, whether they use another viable generation alternative, which they couldn't find, or they use this proxy price, we're going to be high no matter what. They also, EPE stated in their testimony that if they had local generation, it would have ended up costing ratepayers more than the incremental cost of Palo Verde's power. So I think there was a significant amount of discussion about the price, but I think the understanding was that it was just going to be high, and that was the price that was going to have to be paid, essentially. Yeah, and then that's the heart of this case, really, was that EPE sought a variance from the commission to amortize those costs over 12 months instead of recovering it 2 months afterward in order to mitigate that kind of rate shock that would have hit their customers. And so EPE really did undertake, I think, the best possible course of action in determining what source was going to be most reliable, what was going to keep the lights on during the storm, what was going to keep the heat on during the storm, and then how to mitigate that price as best as they possibly could. I do want to jump back to this question of the deference to the commission of its interpretation of its prior orders, because I think we have two issues here. I think we have this question of whether the proxy price was in effect at the time that Palo Verde was used during Winter Storm Uri, and then whether there is substantial evidence to support the commission's decision. And I already kind of talked about the deference to the commission with respect to interpreting its prior orders. I think because it implicates commission expertise, really the commission should be afforded a substantial amount of deference because it had to go back. But I do want to walk through these orders very quickly because I think it's important that the court understand each order and what the commission did in extending it. So we know the 2009 stipulation does say for this stipulation only, but in Section 1G it says EPE's revised rates shall continue in effect until modified thereafter by a final order of the commission. The 2013 order talks about in the final order, the proxy price for Palo Verde based upon the Credit Suisse agreement, which was approved in 2009, continues to be reasonable, even though that agreement terminated in 2010. So there was an indication that the commission understood that the 2009 stipulation had terminated in 2010, but the commission chose to continue that because it continued, bless you, to be reasonable in 2013.
Was there a challenge to the 2009 order in that proceeding?
No, I don't believe so. No, Justice Beale.
Were there challenges in any of the intervening proceedings?
I don't believe there was a challenge in the 2013 order. The 2018 order may have been challenged, but I don't think that the underlying case, which says that the commission determined that it would not adjust the proxy price currently in effect, that's the nugget, is that the commission and all the parties understood that that proxy price was currently in effect in this 2018 case. What happened in that case, and Mr. Wexler can speak probably better to this than I can, but EPE was seeking a different proxy price because at the time EPE was running Palo Verde at a loss. This is really one of the only occasions where the EPE was going to be bringing in more money than they spent on Palo Verde. For these 10 years at the time, Palo Verde was consistently running at a loss. And so EPE in that 2018 case was seeking a change in the proxy price formulation. And that was what was not agreed because the commission said, no, this proxy price continues to be reasonable.
So is it your, again, setting forth the rule,
yes,
is it your argument that in applying the standard of review, we need to look at the consistency of the agency's application in prior future orders?
Yes, Justice Thompson, of the proxy price itself. I think these prior orders are immensely complicated because they implicate rate cases and other things.
So we identify the specific issue and see how you've applied it in the past and in the future.
Yes.
Does that create a standard? What if the PRC were to depart from that? Does that create a standard in which someone could argue that you're not entitled to depart from that without
process
or explanation?
I think, Justice Thompson, it would depend on which case and whether that case was challenged, right? If the commission departed from it in 2015 and that was never challenged, that is now, that has become the standard that then the commission would look back to. I think that, you know, if there was a disagreement about how the commission applied this price and whether process was afforded to the parties in 2015, the time to challenge that was in 2015, not now.
And would that assume all the parties are present to argue that 2015 case? Meaning?
Well, I think we could draw an analogy to any other case that came out of this court, right? If we're looking at precedent from a case in 1989, we don't assume that all the parties currently were, you know, present to argue that case. The question is whether that case was challenged then. And if it wasn't, then that becomes the standard. That becomes the precedent. And I think I just answered my own question about whether the commission should look at these prior orders, whether it's as a statute or as kind of an opinion or a case. I think it should be as a case. that it needs to be looked at as, okay, the commission chose to enact the proxy price in this way in 2015. That wasn't challenged in 2015. That moves forward.
In fact, we have reverse decisions of the PRC where they have departed from, to use the term very loosely, tradition.
Yes.
Where it's been viewed as surprise because instead of going down path A, you've gone down path
right.
B without everybody weighing in.
And I would agree with that, honestly, Justice Bacon, but that's not the case here. There was no surprise here. It's very clear when you look through these prior orders that this proxy price was maintained throughout the last, you know, the 10 years prior to when this case took place. And the commission is permitted to depart from its prior cases if there's adequate notice and the reasoning is based on substantial evidence. But again, that didn't happen here. I think the notice that this proxy price was in effect was very clear because it had been in effect for 10 years and Palo and EPE had continued to recover its use from Palo Verde or lose money based on the formulation of the proxy price until it's challenged here.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Wexler.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I'll start with the standard question and I'll do it in the context of what I believe are the two questions before the court. The first is, was the commission mistaken when it found that it had repeatedly authorized EPE to utilize PV3 at the proxy price? That question is a question of law, and therefore the standard is, was it contrary to law? When the court is evaluating questions that are contrary to law, it has said multiple times, as counsel for the commission just indicated, that the commission is entitled to deference when it implicates a matter of special expertise of the commission, of that agency. Certainly that's true here, where you're talking about a very complicated, in fact, the core function of the commission, which is to regulate the rates that utilities are authorized to charge. I think there's another level of deference that's generally given, and that is when the commission, when a court, previous court is articulating what the previous orders that it has issued are mean. And that's particularly useful here because what you're talking about is a commission that has an ongoing obligation to be regulating utilities, in this case El Paso Electric. And as you can see, these issues have come up multiple times. And so the question of what the commission thought that it was doing is certainly very relevant. The second question before the court is there record evidence to support the commission's determination that PV3 was the most cost-effective resource, in fact, the only resource available to provide energy and capacity during Winter Storm Uri? And that question is a substantial evidence question. I think the commission counsel correctly said that that's entitled to less deference. I want to address some of the questions that have come up here today first, and then I'll turn to some of the other parts of the argument. The first is there was some question about was there a reasoned process? And I want to be clear on exactly what happens here. So in each one of these cases, first in 2009, then in 2013, then in 2015, and in 2018, the commission is following the statutorily obligated process for all of these cases. The 2013 case and the 2018 case are fuel clause continuation cases. The 2015 case and 2009 case are rate cases. The statutes are very clear. Your precedent has said what kind of process the parties are entitled to. There's notice, there's opportunity for hearing, there's opportunity to participate. In almost all of those cases, the city was a direct participant. And so this idea that somehow they didn't have the ability to challenge, to question, to present evidence, they had the opportunity in all of those cases to do that. In 2009, it's true that case was a stipulation. I don't disagree that the stipulation was only in effect at the time the rates lasted.
But that doesn't really matter here because the
Correct.
PRC then adopted it as something that was no longer a stipulation. It was just simply the process or the formula, I think, is what Ms.
That's exactly right, Justice Bacon. In 2013 and the rate case, the commission adopted an order and simply said, regardless of what that stipulation said, this proxy price is reasonable. It represents the lowest cost alternative power available. And if El Paso Electric, you are allowed to use PV3, And if you use it, you must charge this rate. You must charge the proxy price. Again, in 2015, that issue came up again. The commission, the city suggested in its brief that, oh, that issue never really came up. Actually, it did. It was proposed by the company to continue the proxy price, to continue to use PV3, and the commission, again, adopted an order saying, yes, we're going to allow that.
Are there any limits? Because we talk about in our jurisprudence about substantial deference to legal determinations or areas of expertise of the commission. Are there any limits? I mean, I'm worried, and I worry in every single case when this comes up, is there any limit at all? And yeah. if so, what would that look like?
Yes, of course, Your Honor. I think that the limits are the plain language of the statute, or in this case, of the orders. I don't disagree that the orders are should be interpreted according to your normal rules of statutory interpretation, with the idea that deference is given in those areas where that lend themselves to some sort of deference. Here, I would submit there is no room for deference, but the reason there's no room for deference is in each one of the cases that we're talking about, the commission was very clear. EPE is authorized to continue to use PV3 at the proxy price, and so that's exactly what happened. I want to address this issue that I think Justice Behill was alluding to, and that is really what the city is doing here is it's attempting to collaterally attack those previous orders. As I said, there was procedures involved. In fact, the city was directly involved in most of those cases, and if the city was to attack some procedural aspect of those cases, the time to do it would have been in 2009, in 2013, in 2018. Let me give you an example. In 2018, the city was a direct participant. You've heard that from the city here today. If the city thought it was improper to approve the proxy price, to approve the use of PV3, even though some evidence had been excluded, in that case, it was obligated to bring that appeal at that time, in 2018. Because it did not, the order became final and effective, and EPE was not just allowed to follow it, it was obligated to follow it. This is the issue that comes up in the briefing about retroactive rate making, and that is, once the commission adopts a rate for El Paso Electric, El Paso Electric has no choice but to follow that rate. And so when Winter Storm Uri came up, as you've heard from the commission multiple times in its orders, there was a rate in effect for the service under PV3, and that rate was the proxy price.
Well, and that's what led me to my question earlier. Then, given that is what you are obligated to do, is to apply that formula regardless of the price of gas, then does any of this expert testimony about what was happening in that moment and what was highly reliable and what was cost effective, doesn't that kind of all go away if this is the structure that's in place?
Yes, it all goes away. And in fact, that's why I would say that for the city to succeed in its appeal here, it has to win on both of the two issues that I presented to you. If you disagree with the city, that ends the case. And the reason is the commission essentially made four important findings. First, that EPE was authorized to use PV3 at its discretion. Second, that if EPE used PV3 during Winter Storm Uri, it was obligated to charge the proxy price. It had no choice. Third, there is no legal requirement for EPE to provide evidence that PV3 represented the most cost-effective resource. And fourth, the proxy price is representative of the lowest available market price. Now, the first commission order did create some sort of ambiguity there by suggesting, oh, yeah, you should do this additional proceeding about was it the most cost-effective resource or not. But it came back introducing additional questions that should be addressed by this third hearing examiner. And in the second recommended decision, it very clearly said, the hearing examiner said, I took pains to look for that standard to see if there was any obligation for El Paso Electric ever to be providing evidence that PV3 represented the lowest cost resource or the most cost effective resource, and I could not find it. That it simply is not a legal obligation. Instead, what she said is that resource represents a proxy for what is the lowest available resource, and the commission then ultimately decided that.
And another time of year, it may have been incredibly low. It was just the happenstance of a winter storm as opposed to an outage in the summer.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I think, Justice Thompson, you were asking questions about, isn't there some obligation if this is always occurring the same way, if the commission adopts the same rule and it applies in the same. In fact, that's exactly what happened here. The evidence shows that for a decade, at least since 2009, El Paso Electric has been applying the exact same formula in the exact same way. It submits monthly reports. Those reports were approved each time without deviation. And to your point, Justice Bacon, for years and years and years, the price of gas was very low, and El Paso Electric took a loss. It was providing power through PV3 to meet its obligations, and regardless of the fact that it was taking a loss, it still applied the proxy price formula. This is the first time anyone has challenged.
Let's say the next time they depart. It seems to me that we may catch that on arbitrary and capricious, but it seems to me we're building in, and tell me why I'm wrong, this heightened standard. PRC comes to us and says, we looked at all those previous orders. We think it's consistent. This is what you need to look at and review, and you need to give us a higher standard of deference. What is the standard at that point?
So two reasons why I think that this is a very unlikely scenario, and then I'll try and address your question. The two reasons that's a very unlikely scenario, certainly for Palo Verde 3, that will not happen because the commission in 2020 said we're not going to approve a proxy price anymore. So El Paso Electric simply does not use PV3 any longer to supply New Mexico citizens. The second reason I think that that's unlikely is because changing a rate because of the retroactive rate-making principle requires a new proceeding. In other words, there wouldn't just be this practice and procedure. What would happen is either the commission on its own accord or the utility itself would have to go to the commission and say, it's time to change a rate. Only at the end of that proceeding can a new rate be adopted. Unless and until that happens, the existing rate must be charged, and it must be allowed by the commission. That is the flip side of the retroactive rate-making principle. But I will I take the thrust of your question, Justice Thompson, and I'll try and provide an example, and that is, let's say in this case, the order from the first from the first commission stood. In other words, the commission said, you have to prove that it's the most cost-effective. We would be here arguing before you that Hobbs Gas would apply. We would be saying that, listen, you have been doing this for 10 years. El Paso Electric has consistently followed exactly this procedure, this exact rule, under your guidance.
My question to you at that point would be, in late October, you told me to apply a standard in which I give higher deference to the application. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, I think that would apply only to those orders, right? Okay. So, had the commission come in and said, again, had they not reversed course by the second recommended decision and here said, was not in effect. You still have to prove lowest cost alternative or whatever. I don't know that that's a problem. I think the commission still would be entitled to that heightened deference. I think that would be something in that situation that I simply would have to overcome. I would have to show that either by virtue of the long-standing practice of the commission or by virtue of the strength of the plain language and the context and structure of the statute and the regulatory scheme.
Well, and wouldn't your client's position have been in this case if the PRC had departed from that lineage coming from the original order and said, no, now you've got to prove anew that this was met both the reliability standard and the lowest price.
Yeah.
your position today would be you still win because you've provided substantial evidence of that in any event because it was the only resource available at the time.
That's exactly right, Justice Bacon. In fact, and so turning to that issue, which is the substantial evidence one, I mean, here the commission ultimately found there was some colloquy about back and forth about the reliability versus cost. With all due respect, I don't think that that's really what the evidence was showing. I think what the evidence showed was there simply was no other resource. There was no other available resource. So other than PV3, what the evidence showed is there might have been two other alternatives. The first was local generation, that is sort of generation El Paso Electric owns. But what the testimony of Mr. Gonzalez, Mr. Baracek showed was, in fact, that was not available because of the very gas problems that were caused by Winter Storm Uri. The second available potential source of energy and capacity would have been market purchases. And there again, El Paso Electric went through both as a part of the case looking very carefully at those market purchases and found that there were none available throughout the course of those 11 days during February of 2021. Now, it's true, there was some competing evidence from the city and from other parties, but what the commission is obligated to do in those circumstances is to weigh that evidence. That's exactly what it did here. You can see that reflected in the second recommended decision where it's articulating that evidence. And ultimately what it found was, yes, in fact, it's true. There were no other alternative resources. And even had those been available, they wouldn't have been more expensive. I see my time is up.
Thank you, counsel. All right, Ms. Stevens, 10 minutes.
May it please the court, I'm going to start with some corrections of total factual misstatements. Starting with what Mr. Working backwards since it's easier for me. What Mr. Wexler just said about there were no market purchases available during the course of the cold weather event. Mr. Gonzalez testified repeatedly, both in his direct testimony in response to an interrogatory and at hearing, that we cannot affirm or deny that there were no market purchases available because we weren't looking every single hour of
the
day.
Can I ask you, because I don't want your time to run out, opposing counsel said that the city's attempting to collaterally attack prior orders, and that seems to me to be somewhat true, so I'm wondering your response to that. Why is that not correct?
Well, I guess my response to that is that, again, our interpretation of those orders, and if you read them carefully, as the hearing examiner in 2104 did, they did not decide those issues. The first case, the 1300 case, they didn't have to decide that issue because it was still in effect, and they didn't. They said we approved the fuel clause. Only if you believe that the fuel clause and the proxy price are just one and the same thing, can you even begin to accept these arguments. In the second case, you can read through the whole case, nothing was said. The recommended decision said that EPE asked for continuation, but fortunately for all of us, she didn't just say, we accept EPE's application, thousands of pages, except she defined what she was approving, and if you go to the findings of fact and conclusions of law, nothing about that. She says that we changed the base cost of fuel, and she approved reconciliation, which you will remember from the rate case appeal, what fuel cost reconciliation was, but she did not say that either they were continuing the fuel clause or continuing the Palo Verde price. In the next case, the 18006 case, which is the one that the commission finally identifies in the order on rehearing as the operative stipulation, they said that it's not in the scope of the case. How could they approve it or disapprove it if it wasn't in the scope of the case? And Mr. Wexler seems to think that the city had a burden to appeal a case, but how we tried this? We tried this with the Palo Verde ruling or dicta in the rate case. Is how could we appeal something that the commission says isn't in the case? I mean, if you read their their decision as deciding what they were, they themselves framed as what they were deciding, they just didn't decide it, period. That's it. So that I think that I may have gotten a little bit off track there, but I think that's why it's not a collateral attack, and that's probably the biggest one. I mean, we were denied the opportunity, and we thought about an appeal briefly, but realized that we wouldn't get very far because it was something, you know, it would be easy enough to say we didn't decide it. It's not within the scope. Over and over again, she even the hearing examiner even attached her scoping order to her recommended decision because she was so adamant about that point. So how anybody can claim that that's either the linchpin or any sort of support is very, very hard to believe. And this is why your role as the deciders of law comes into cases. You don't, you know, you can defer to questions that involve their legal questions that involve the commission's expertise, but these are, as you mentioned, procedural, these are due process, these are questions of law. This is your bailiwick, not theirs. And so as far as the evidence, quickly going through the evidence, well, Mr. Gonzalez again said that they couldn't affirm or deny. I cross-examined him and said, well, would you have known, you know, were you actually at the trading desk those days, and would you have known that if there was an aberration in the market at Palo Verde, the hub where trading goes on? And he said, possibly, but again, he never denied, he never stated that. And if you look, I have some exhibits, I have my one popular exhibit, but if you look at various exhibits, here's one that says curtail sales. But there are exhibits in the record, I won't pull them all out, that show that EPE was in fact trading. Mr. Reyes testified that there were at their hub there was normal conditions. Prices were high because there was high demand, but there were essentially normal conditions. Nothing freaky like the whole hub locking up. That did happen in the Southwest Power Pool in ERCOT in Texas. But Palo Verde and EPE and PNM are just not connected to there. They have one tiny little interconnection. They operate on a different frequency. It's like a whole little electrical world that they were not part of. Going on to Mr. Wexler's arguments about collateral estoppel, I do believe that he is, as stated in our brief, that the company is trying to come up with a reasoned decision for the commission's decision that the commission itself didn't give, and that's definitely part of your jurisprudence. We're not required to give deference to the commission's legal interpretations also comes from that same Rio Grande chapter of the Sierra Club case. Ms. Lecoq, if I go factually, Ms. Lecoq and everybody else seems to be saying that they had no other choice, and I believe Justice Bacon may be accepting that thing. Well, first of all, the evidence is very clear. Again, Mr. Gonzalez, they didn't specifically choose to use Palo Verde 3 as the weather got cold. They used it every day of the week, every day of the year, going back all that way. They were using the Palo Verde, the proxy price formula as being, it spared them the decision-making of how to use this excluded asset that really was being traded for their own benefit. And cold weather had nothing to do with why they used it. And the cost just, it comes down, if you look it's over and over again, but this one version I'm looking at is Exhibit JIB1, it's Borden's testimony, how they calculated the proxy price. They calculated it based on every single day. If it had been only seven, if they had only needed for 7 days, it would have been maybe roughly a quarter of the $6.8 million. And we could quibble over whether that, you know, how you would factor in the capacity charge component. But it would not be $235.95 every times 43 times every hour of the day. And this is coming back again, I'm running out of time here, to the notion of the fuel clause gives prior approval to decisions and choices on a flow-through basis, subject to, since it's prior approval, subject to the commission coming back and looking at it retroactively. So retroactive rate-making considerations have to be extremely moderated here. Otherwise, there's no limit to what could be imposed. And in this case, think about it this way. Do you think that El Paso Electric really would have gone out there and bought energy at $235.95 a megawatt hour for every single day of February 2021 when even the inflated index price, both Mr. Reyes and Mr. Schiestel agreed, was $71.89? No. The words originally came from commission open meeting discussions, but it was a windfall, and it was a windfall that came from extending cases. Read those orders carefully. Extending cases beyond their natural limit. And lastly, because I know my time's about to run out, 15 seconds here. If you would compare exhibit ER1 and Reyes's test exhibit ER1 is 14 RP 13342, and Mr. Schiestel's exhibit JS2 6 RP 0864. This idea that EPE was operating at a loss under the is just it depends on which time period you look at. Mr. Schiestel calculated a loss because he looked at just 18, 19, 20. Mr. Reyes went back to 15, and he came up with an $8 million benefit to El Paso Electric if they got the $4 million, the extra money for February 2021, and a $4 million benefit if they didn't get that amount.
All right. Thank you, Council. You're over time. Thank you. In the matter S1SC40636, the City of Las Cruces versus New Mexico Public Regulation Commission, this matter is deemed submitted. The court is in recess until call the clerk. Court's in recess.